This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, Andrea Cordill tells us about technology she is using to enhance her training. But before we hear from Andrea, we're going to talk to Jan Rumbaugh, who is an adult amateur rider who is featured in the April issue of the USDF Connection magazine. We do have one item of news, though, for the attention of the Great American Insurance Group USDF Regional Championship competitors. The USDF would like to remind you to check the Regional Championships competitors page on the website at usdf.org, and there will be a direct link listed in the show notes of this podcast. You will need to be sure to check your region's competition dates and the qualifying periods, and you'll also find some very helpful hints regarding the program rules and the score checks, as well as a change of region forms and information regarding the US dressage finals. That's all on the website at usdf.org. Jan joins me now. Welcome back to the program, Jan.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about why you're an adult amateur and how you got started and why you decided to continue to be an amateur and not turn professional. Let's start with what you're doing right now, what horses you're riding, Jan.
Well, I have my homebred junior, which is Grand Prix now, and I went through every single level with him, and I didn't allow myself to jump a level before I had civil scores in the 70s. And in the I-1, I told myself I'm not allowed to I-2 before I had a couple of scores in 70. And in I-2, a 69, two 69s before I could go up to Grand Prix. So I've been very strict with myself, so I wouldn't have holes when I got to Grand Prix. And of course, there's always holes, but you know, I always told myself, maybe I don't have holes. and that was with Junior. And I have the father, which is the sire, which is 25, and he's here in my barn, and I rode him Grand Prix. And then I have a 4.5-year-old, her name is My Maiden, and she's a Danish horse, and I bought her in Denmark. I used to be Danish, now I'm an American, and she's 4.5, and I do training level and first level with her, and she's gotten some nice scores in first level, and training level she got up in the 70s, and then I have a Prince and George horse I won that I'm going to try to finish to complete. So those are the three horses I ride, and then I have a couple of mares that I breed on.
Now, you're in your 70s now, Jan, and clearly still motivated. What do you get most out of the sport now to what you used to do?
Well, actually, it's almost the same. It's really amazing because I do not get tired, and I'm still flexible enough. I'm just very grateful for my body that it's been so nice to me. And I used to jog a lot and play tennis, and I don't know. I'm just very fortunate that my body has been so nice to me, can keep me in shape.
So you haven't been plagued by injuries as so many riders have. Do you do other activities to help with your suppleness?
No, actually, I just ride my horses, and then I walk my dogs, and we have stairs in my house, and I just run up and down the stairs, and I stretch, and I can still put my hands flat on the floor. So the day I can't do that, then I don't do yoga, but maybe I should start going to do yoga because I'm sure I'm going to be maybe not as strong as I used to be in my 50s or 40s, but I've always been very fortunate.
And how much do you ride? Do you find riding every day is something
you have
to do? Oh,
yes, I ride every single day, except Monday. And I ride three horses a day. And I train them, work them. And my coach, Mikaela Gunnarsson, she is a coach of two of them every day. And I ride in the summer, except if I go and look at my lady, which goes to Europe. Otherwise, all my life, I've been very disciplined about my riding. And I have a goal every day I ride. I set my goal before I get on the horse. And yep, that's usually what I do.
And where did this all begin? You grew up in Denmark, of course. Was there a family interest in the sport?
Yes, I where I grew up, the house or the place I grew up, we had stables, and my mother rented the stable out. There was racehorses in one part of the barn, and there was a she rented out the other part of the barn. There was an outdoor ring and an indoor ring. It was like an old place, and there were horses, but I was never given a horse. I had to work for it. And then my aunt did the riding for polio children, because when I grew up, we had a lot of polio. And so I helped with that, and I was fortunate enough when I was little that they taught me how to train the ponies.
Now,
I was always involved with horses, always been my interest.
Now, what about competing in other disciplines, though? Were you ever tempted to go jumping?
Oh, yes, I was a jumper. I jumped, and I jumped in Germany when I was 17, 18, and I did free-day eventing, which was there called military, and I hunted. You know, in Denmark, we do have hunts, but they're all, it's like paper trace hunt that you have. You don't go after any animals, but they built the jumps, and you have two riders that has a foxtail on the shoulder, and they jump the jumps, and you go after them. So I did all of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Were you not tempted ever to go professional, though, Jan, or was it something you always just wanted?
No, because I had to always had to work. You know, when my first husband, I was always working, and if you're professional, you really have to do it all day, and I couldn't do that. I had to do other things, but my interest for horses were always there. And so when I came to America, I think it was Ruth Avenet. She started the program in USDF many years ago for amateurs, and there was not that many amateurs around, and she asked me if I would like to be an amateur, and I think Alice Malone was an amateur at that time. That was in the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. So I always stayed. And for me, an amateur, we have to ride our own horses. And if you become a professional, every time I always feel that you might lose a horse, that you really invest a lot of emotion and hard work in. So I'm fortunate that I've been able to work on the side so I could pay for my horses.
So you've always owned the horses that you've ridden, yeah, and competed with in dressage?
Well, when I was a child, no, because my aunt let me have my horse. My mother would not let me have a horse. She always felt I had to earn it. Mm-hmm.
Now, what about trainers that you've worked with then, Jan? Who has inspired you?
My mentor was Gunnar Andersen in Denmark that taught me cattle, that got two individual silver medals in the Olympics in dressage. He was my mentor, and even when I was over here, I got him over here. He taught Ellen Dixon, he taught Gunnar Østergaard, and since I was a little girl, he always helped me. So that was my first, I was really, really fortunate with that. And so he came over every year, a couple of times a year here, even in Florida. And then another mentor I had was Jaap Pot, which was an international judge from Holland. That was an incredible judge, and I got to know him very well. And then I have written, I have written one time, I think a year or two, I wrote with Robert Dover, and I have written with, I have taken clinics with all kinds of people. I love Kira. I've taken clinics with Kira Kirkland, and I've just always read a lot of books. Several years I wrote with Jan Bronze, and here lately my friend Mikaela Gunnarsen, she's been here 10 years in this country, and she's Danish. And so those are the people that really have helped me in my life with horses.
What have you found to be probably most challenging about the sport of dressage, Jan?
I don't find it so challenging, but you have to be disciplined. I always feel you really have to unite who you are to your horse, and you make sure that your horse understands what you want out of them. Maybe that's a challenge that, you know, you have to make sure that the horse understands what you're teaching them. And I just love the sport. It's discipline. It's beautiful. It's you're together with your horse. You connect with your horse. I think it's a wonderful sport.
And clearly it's not enough for you to be riding at home and enjoying the sport at home without the pressure of competition, but you enjoy the competition environment and continuing to compete.
Yes, I love it, because what it does, it puts you out there and you've got to concentrate at those 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And I take it as a lesson and see where I am. And I always take it as a lesson. You have a video, you have a judge, and you have those 5 to 10 minutes where you really got to concentrate. And then you can go home and look at it, and you can try to get better. And I still feel that I can maybe get better. You never know.
What do you want to do in the sport now, with the horses that you have? How far do you want to go, and how long do you see yourself competing?
I don't know. I don't know. I just enjoy it, just one day at a time. And I don't know how long. I don't really, I went to the USDF finals, and I was thrilled to win the freestyle Grand Prix with Junior. And I haven't, 2 years in a row, I was reserve champion in the Grand Prix. Maybe I'll try to do that and see if I can. I don't know. Maybe I can, maybe I can't.
All right. Well, clearly thoroughly enjoying the sport still as an adult amateur and a senior adult amateur, Jan, if we may say so. So long may you continue to enjoy it. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Always enjoyable.
Another rider who is getting the most out of the sport is Andrea Cordill, who, instead of traveling to her trainer, has found ways to utilize technology and bring the trainer to her remotely. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the program.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Well, we all know how technology has really changed the landscape in many walks of life, Andrea, but you've found a way to make it work for you in your training, haven't you?
Yes, ma'am. And I kind of have a unique situation, and I do lessons over the computer, virtual video lessons. And I've developed this process about 5 years ago. So I explained to folks in the article about how I set that up, and hopefully it can help others that might be in a similar situation to mine.
So were you technologically minded then, Andrea? Did you simply get your arms around the technology that you knew and how you could apply it to dressage?
Well, about 5 years ago, I actually ride reining cow horse, and about 6 years ago, I kind of got interested in dressage and started riding it. And, you know, I managed to get training in first fine, and then realized I needed help, but I live a long way from anyone who does dressage. It's about 300, 500 miles one way. And so I needed help, but I didn't know how to get it. I couldn't do a typical lesson. So over dinner conversations, my husband, who is technology inclined, you know, I was talking about how you could get a video analyzed, but nothing replaces a live lesson. And so he is the one that I credit with the idea of doing the live lessons, and he's the one that figured out the process of how we get a live video lesson.
So talk us through that then, Andrea. How does that actually happen? How can people get involved? What's the process?
It's actually a very simple method, and it's very effective. As I said, we've been doing it for 5 years now, so we've got it pretty much down. And so I'll talk about both ends, both the rider and the instructor ends, okay? And I'm going to start with the rider's end, which requires a little bit more work than the instructor's end. And the way we do it is we start with a laptop computer, and we have that hooked up to a video camera with an optical zoom. The optical zoom is important for the quality of the video that it provides. The laptop has a USB video capture card and is hooked up to the video camera. And then we use a video sharing service. We use Skype, but you can also use something like Google Hangouts. There's a few different options. And then we use a good wireless internet connection. It needs to be 3 megabytes down or 1 megabyte upload speed. And the more, the better. And what that does is it provides a clear image for the instructor to look at. And then we need a phone. And I use a Bluetooth in my ear so that I can have both hands on the reins. So that provides both the audio and the video, okay? We have the cameraman. In my case, my husband does the video, but there's also new options for auto cameras for someone that may not have access to someone to help them with the camera work. There's several auto cameras. Solo Shot and Pixio are two options. And so technically, you don't actually need anyone but yourself and your equipment to do the video lesson. And so what we do is we provide the video to the instructor through that Skype connection, and then I talk to my instructor over the phone, and I can hear them right in my ear. The instructor, all they need is a computer with internet connection, and they also need the Skype or the Google Hangouts or whatever video transfer program you're using, and then they need a phone. So basically three things, pretty simple. Most people have them. And what that does is you can literally do a live lesson through the computer. So my instructor can be 2,000 miles away, and they are literally in my ear. We have very little trouble with delays on a good normal day. They can count tempi strides. They can count pirouette strides right along with me as I'm riding it. And so it's actually fairly effective.
How long would a lesson be then, Andrea?
Just like a normal lesson. It's just a normal lesson. They're just 2,000 miles away. So however long it is. And what we do is everything gets set up a few minutes beforehand. I get warmed up for my lesson just like you would any other dressage lesson, any normal dressage lesson. And the instructor logs in, you know, 5 minutes beforehand. And we start making the connections, and then we start at whatever the beginning time is. Obviously, the advantages for the rider are you get lessons, and technically you can get lessons from anyone in the world. It's literally the only option I have. If I couldn't do video lessons, I wouldn't be able to do lessons at all. I wouldn't be able to compete in dressage. The instructor, the advantage for them is they don't have a lot of driving time, and they don't have a lot of costs associated, and it's a lot easier for them. You could literally teach lessons, a full day of lessons, and never get off your couch. And so maybe an instructor has a need for that, that they have to stay still, and they could still work very easy for them if they can set up those lessons.
And do you have a network of trainers that are utilizing this system then, Andrea?
I don't know a whole lot of people that are using it. I have used several instructors, and basically I made contact with them and we discussed it and have made it work. You have to have a little bit of technology orientation to a certain extent. Computers cannot frighten you, but a basic understanding, a good solid internet connection, and almost anyone can do it. There's obviously a few downsides. If you have bad weather on either end, that can mess up the internet connection. If you have a bad internet connection, the lessons aren't gonna happen because they can't see the video. And that has happened numerous times over the career. I mean, that can happen in a real lesson too. And the other thing is that the instructor is a little bit limited compared to a normal lesson. So what I mean by that is you lose the 3D aspect. The instructor can't walk around. The instructor can't physically move your hands or move your body. The instructor can't get on the horse. They have to use just their words. And so some of those things that an instructor might use, they don't have an option for anymore, right? They just have to talk you through it. And so that can be a limit. But when your option is that or nothing, it's gotten me pretty far.
Now, you mentioned that it was accessible, you know, as far away as 2,000 miles. Is this something that could be used globally?
I don't see why not. It's simply internet upload-download connections. And so all I can speak to is my experience, and I've trained with several people around the country with no problem. But I certainly think that you could access it around the world as well.
Yeah, potentially you could have a European trainer then in your backyard.
Absolutely.
And now what about the costs then? I'm sure people are thinking, well, is this affordable? It sounds a very grand scheme. What sort of price range are we talking about?
Well, actually, it's to me, it's pretty affordable. Most people have a laptop, so to me, that's given expense. A camera costs a few hundred dollars, and everybody has a phone. Bluetooth costs, I don't know, $100. So you're talking, even if you didn't have any of this stuff, it would be a few thousand at most. But almost everyone has a laptop, computer, and internet, and a phone. So it's pretty limited cost.
And how can they find more information about this, Andrea?
There's the write-up in the USDF connection. And otherwise, you just kind of have to get those elements together. Which is you need the computer, the video sharing, and internet, and a phone, and you're pretty much good to go. I did want to address one question that I get pretty commonly, which is, can I use my phone or my tablet, like your iPad, in place of the laptop and the camera? And I get that question very often, and the answer is yes, you can. You can just take your smartphone and video the lesson, and you can go to Google Hangouts and do the video right there on your phone. But the quality is going to be bad, and you have to remember that the video you're providing is your instructor's eyes. You know, whereas they would be standing in the arena with you in a live lesson, in a virtual lesson, the only way they can help you is by what you provide them over the computer. And that's why we use the laptop and the video camera, is because that way it provides a superior quality, and so they're able to see more detail. And so while you can use your phone or tablet as a video camera, you're going to lose the quality, especially, for example, if you're down at the end of the dressage court, you're going to be a minuscule little dot on their screen, and it's hard for them to help you. And so that's why we went with the system that we have. And then, of course, if you do use your phone, beware that of your mobile data usage, because when you're transferring video, it can eat up a lot. So be mindful of that.
Now, you mentioned a bit the lens range on the video camera there. Are you suggesting that the camera is positioned at A or C, or can you, like with Solo Shot, and you mentioned Pixio 2, there's a couple of common remote robot cameras. Would they be better at B or E?
Basically, we set it right where the judge would be sitting. And the problem is you really can't move around. Remember I talked about the 2D versus the 3D. And so while an instructor that was right there with you could move around the arena, with the setup we have, it's basically you have one spot and you have to set it up. So we set it up right there where the judge would sit, and that's where we station it. And so what I can do is, if I need to do a movement so they can see the side, I just have to turn myself 90 degrees so that they can see it from the side. Or we have to work around that. That's just one of the accommodations you have to make.
All right. I guess the next step to this then is incorporating a drone, and that you'd get all dimensions.
Right. And I did want to mention a few virtual options, again, for anybody that's out there in the middle of nowhere. There are some online deals that can help, and if you don't mind, I'd like to mention a few of those. In addition to the live lessons that I do, there's an option for online learning and further education, and obviously USDF's online education has a lot of videos and whatnot that you can, and articles that you can learn from. But if you want to go to a show but you can't have access, you know, it's 6 hours, 4 to 6 hours for me to drive to a show, and so sometimes I can't go frequently for a schooling. There's something called Dressage Training Online that provides more videos, and that's a subscription service, but they're very good. I've enjoyed that system. And then Dressage Anywhere, you can write a test and submit it for scoring, and it's sort of like a virtual schooling show, and that's helped me figure out where I am without having to drive 500 miles or 1,000 miles. So that's been a big help as well, if you want to, in addition to the lessons, do some schooling shows to see where you are.
Well, lots of online resources there, Andrea, and I know that you featured also the app Coach's Eye in the article at USDF Connection magazine, and that's all in the April issue of USDF Connection. Andrea, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and telling us more about you, how you've so successfully embraced technology to improve training.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and I hope that the information might help some other people in a similar situation.
And that's it for this week's show. As always, you can find more information on the topics that we cover here on the show on the website at usdf.org. And whilst you're there, don't forget to check out any updates on eTrack. For those of you who prefer to listen to the show on the go, don't forget you can download this podcast from the iTunes podcast store. Just look for USDF and download it to your smartphone or tablet app. There are several out there, including Stitcher and Podbean. And finally, a special thanks to all our international listeners. We know you're listening from countries around the world, and we're delighted to have you join us. So until next week, thanks for your company, and remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.